face. You see it coming. You know what it is. You can respond to it in whatever way you respond to these things. And then you come inside where people, you know, are dressed in nice clothes and supposedly behaving, and it's much more subtle.
Right.
And I never knew how to label it until I, you know, got involved in Winset. I heard about labels like microaggressions. Oh, so that's what those were, you know, where you're the only woman in a meeting and somebody hands you papers and said, we need copies of this.
Yep.
Or you're expected to be the one that takes the notes, or you're expected to be the one that gets the coffee or does what they call those housekeeping exercises where, you know, around the office, because you're the woman and God, you can't ask the guys to, you know, put together a list or organize a party or, you know, that kind of thing.
And add on another layer, such as having a skin color that's not white. And it's even worse.
Absolutely. I mean, it, as part of my role in Winset, I took, I've got the certificate up there somewhere, GBA plus. Through the Women and Gender Equality offers that. And, you know, you start to realize that one size definitely doesn't fit all.
Yeah.
So when you're developing a policy in an organization or for a government, if you don't look at all those aspects, everybody's made up of, you know, they can, it's their gender, their sex, their the color of their skin, their religion, their sexual orientation. And if you don't take all of those factors into account when you're developing a policy, you're likely going to develop a policy that impairs the ability of some people to be able to take the benefit from it.
Yes, absolutely. Intersectionality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, that is the word.
Yeah.
When I was first hearing it, it took me a while to kind of wrap my head around what it meant. But I think that training probably was the piece that kind of put it all together for me.
Oh, interesting. That's great. Yeah, it's absolutely something that we always have to keep into consideration for sure. Well, that was a long answer to the question of a less than great moment, but I really appreciate your perspective on it, especially having such a, you know, long career. Like some of the people that I talk to on this podcast haven't had as long of a career yet. And so, but still, their answer is usually that they have something that they can talk about. So.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose that's just maybe just it's just the way it is. But I mean, I'm feeling very encouraged that you've seen a trend that is on the positive side. So that's really great. And actually speaking.
Positive trend.
Yeah. And speaking of being positive, I'd love to now get positive again and ask you, what is your favorite thing about your field?
Yeah, now what is that field? I mean, when I first started out, I mean, it would have been. My favorite was building those places for people, physically building those places for people.
Mm-hmm.
I always used to joke when I became a construction superintendent that most superintendents, they like the flying forms and let's get the roof on and then stuff inside. But I love the finishes. I love the spaces. And so to me, that was an important part of what I was building.
Yeah.
And I loved that. When I got into leadership, I loved the ability to, you know, bring a team along and make a change in the organization that had an impact. And now I think what I love about my career in where I'm in my own business and I've created kind of a center of expertise around professional practice, quality management in engineering and geoscience. And I think out of that, I've come to realize how the impact that has and how important it is for public safety, the environment, and the other pieces that as engineers, we have a code of ethics that says that we will hold those things paramount when we're doing our work. And we have great technical expertise in all these various fields, but if we don't take care of the professional practice and manage the quality, things go wrong.
Right.
And when they go wrong, it has an impact on the public.
Yes. Those critical systems. Yeah, definitely. And how would you say, speaking of the public, how would you say that your work is how it relates to the world at large. Like, where would our listeners actually come into contact with what you're doing now?
Where would you come in contact with it? You probably wouldn't come in contact with it directly.
Okay.
I'm working with a lot of organizations that are both public and private sector organizations. And I'm pleased with the fact that they're not just looking at complying with the new requirements for, you know, getting a permit to practice mm-hmm. and putting in place a professional practice management plan. Those organizations are looking at, you know, well, how do we take this as an opportunity to improve ourselves, to improve the way we deliver and you know, to prevent things that shouldn't happen from happening and make things that we do want to happen happen.
Right.
And so I enjoy working with those organizations that are trying to, you know, turn this into an opportunity to improve.
Yeah, absolutely. Sounds good. And when it comes to success with what you're doing, all the things you're doing, how do you define success? And what does that look like personally for Marg?
Well, success is being able to get paid for something I'm passionate about and volunteer in an area I'm passionate about. Mm. I'm passionate about what I do and get paid for in my business around helping to improve professional practice in our professions.
Yeah.
I'm also excited and, you know, about the opportunity to work, to volunteer and to foster the opportunity for more women to enter, stay, grow, become leaders in our professions. So I get to work in and volunteer in two areas of passion. Outside of work, I've got a, you know, wonderful partner, a spouse that you know, married over 30 years, we enjoy our time together. And it's a good thing in the pandemic, because there's a lot of that. You know, we have a sailboat and love to sail.
Oh, nice.
We've done some traveling, but, you know, I mean, I'm certainly cautious about whether there's going to be any of that in the future. I have more of an interest in that than he does. But it does, having a career lends itself to that.
Yeah.
And maybe there, you know, I'd love to ski. But again, pandemic has kind of hampered that a little bit. So whether they'll be skiing this year or not, I don't know. And so there's almost an avid walker. I mean, love to walk. And so all those things kind of come into play. And I find that when you're working for yourself and you're working from home, you can mix all those together. And, you know, like a day can be made up of everything.
Yeah.
It isn't going to work like it was when I was with UMA. You're doing a 10-hour day, 5 days a week.
Oh,
you're working on the weekends. You know, you can balance that a lot better. And, you know, part of that comes with, you know, being in my own business and being able to manage what amount of work I take on and what I do.
I was actually going to ask you about work-life balance. And whether or not you feel like you have it or whether it even exists. And it sounds like you do think it exists.
when I was back working as a leader in UMA, I'm not sure I knew work-life balance. Those were long days and there was a lot of travel, probably a day a month being out of town. And so, you know, I guess that wears on people.
Yeah.
And so I can say now I have balance of life, although my husband might not agree with all of that all the time, but I like to think that's true.
Yeah.
But I think for those that are working, you know, especially if they're aspiring to leadership roles, finding that balance of life is tough.
Yes.
And on top of that, having a family, I mean, I never had a family, and so I didn't have that challenge of, you know, kind of balancing all those different roles. Mm-hmm. I give a lot of credit to some of the women that I know who, you know, have built companies, they've had families, they've accomplished things in their careers, and they've been involved in encouraging more women to enter the professions. It's, you know, like pretty amazing.
Yeah, it really is. I absolutely admire them. I think there is more of a conversation and realization happening that we need to have support for women who are going to be mothers or who are mothers, or people who are parents, I should say, actually, because we're talking about it with all genders, really. And I'm really happy that it's happening, because I honestly, when I was younger, I wasn't sure I was even going to see it in my lifetime. I was feeling very cynical about, I just felt like all around me, there were these people struggling to be parents and to struggle, balance their careers with it. And so I'm feeling more hopeful about it these days, thank goodness, especially as somebody who wants to start a family.
I think that the pandemic has really exposed yes. that issue. It's a societal thing. I mean, if we want to continue the population, right. You know, women need to have children. And I really appreciate the fact that this daycare program has been, I mean, it's ways to go to roll out yeah. to provide affordable daycare. But it's the difference between getting women who've left the workforce and in more numbers than men, yeah. getting them back into the workforce, yeah. is, you know, daycare at an affordable rate, connecting with them at home where they're working, giving them some of the tools to get back into the workforce. Again, you know, that's one of the focuses of WinSet and a recent project that we've taken on, funded by Women and Gender Equality. I think those, we need to get women back into the workforce. We need to support them in having children. We need to support parents in being involved in their kids' lives, yep. not having to give that up for, for a career. I mean, it's just good for all of us.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more, honestly. Couldn't agree more. This has been such a great conversation. I am thankful for your perspectives and your insights and everything. And, you know, as we kind of wrap up, I would love to hear what your advice would be for the next generation of STEM professionals or trades professionals, either way, or both.
Mm-hmm. or probably anyone starting their career. I had a number of things that I would recommend, and we've talked about a lot of them. I think the idea of believing in yourself, that you're going to be more than you see yourself mm-hmm. being, of finding those mentors and sponsors, developing yourself. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's one thing to come out of school with that degree or diploma or certificate, but if you don't continue to learn throughout your life, you're still back in whatever year you graduated from, and right. others have advanced beyond. And there's nothing as exciting as learning new things, learning yeah. how to do new things. I think that I mentioned about the opportunity that didn't look like an opportunity that led to my position as a VP. I think that, you know, things that made it, they look like challenges, they don't look like opportunities, but see through them.
Yeah.
See how you can turn it into an opportunity, because that's important for your career. And I know there were a number of other things that I would have had in there, but none of them are coming to mind right now. But I think the big one is, you know, believe in yourself, develop yourself. Oh, I do remember another one about speaking up, because I think women have a tendency to, and I was certainly this, I was probably a wimp when I graduated. So women have a tendency, you know, not to raise their hand and say something in a group, not to stand up and speak in front of others, not to speak up when they see something that should be challenged.
Right.
And in early career, that would have been me in spades. I now love the opportunity to get up and speak in front of others. I've worked hard at that over the years. I've learned how to challenge when I see something that isn't right. And maybe that comes with a little bit of age and experience. It's harder to do when you're younger. Mm. And I've certainly learned to put my hand up and ask questions and make comments. And so I think those are important things. Stand up, be heard, speak up, learn to speak.
I love it. That is absolutely key, among other things. But yeah, totally agree. And I really appreciate you giving us that perspective and reminding us of those things. And thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. Where can people connect with you?
I'm certainly, I'm on LinkedIn. I'm open to people connecting me with me on there. They can do a search for me, and that's probably the easiest way, rather than, you know, trying to give out long email addresses and such. But if, you know, I do look, you know, to see who's connected or invited me to connect on LinkedIn. And so that's always a good way.
Great. And that's actually how we connected to have you on the podcast. Yeah. So that's great. Well, thank you again so much for your time. And thanks everybody for listening.
Thank you.
We acknowledge that Best of the West is hosted and produced on the unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations. Best of the West is also produced on Treaty 6 territory. Best of the West has featured many guests and has been hosted and produced by people of different lands, countries, and cultures. But we also acknowledge that we are settlers on this land. We are grateful for the privilege to be working as visitors on these unceded and ancestral territories of all the Métis, Inuit, First Nations, and Indigenous people that call this land home. Thank you again for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and want to keep up with all the latest news on women in STEM, you can visit us online at wwest.ca. There, you can subscribe to our bi-weekly newsletter, connect with us on social media, and more. From everyone at West Coast Women in Engineering, Science, and Technology, thanks for listening. Thank you.